You might say you've been delivered. You might say that you've been damned. But when the deluge beats the Lismore levee, all God's children stand in muddy, muddy water.
Hi there, trippers. How are you travelling today on this, the very difficult first anniversary of the megastorm that changed us all in so many different ways? We're going to chat with Jeanty St. Clair, Lismore's unofficial story catcher and curator of rescue stories and portraits of civilian rescuers from the February 2022 flood. We'll catch up with her on the banks of Leicester Creek in Lismore, which along with Wilson's Creek delivered the deluge to the town. We'll also speak with Lissa Coote and Adele Smout about the Currabell Hall Flower Show, which is bringing back blooms to this fabulous country hall this weekend with all sorts of activities, including a fundraiser to help with upgrades. And in case you didn't realise, World Pride has come to Sydney, New South Wales and our Shire, with rainbow flags flapping from police stations and surf rescue buggies. Inclusivity and diversity is the mantra of the Rainbow Tribe. We'll talk with Brett Solomon about how the LGBTQ community is enhanced by digital platforms in some countries and targeted by them in others. That's This Week in Cyberspace, number 18. This is Luke Vassella with Muddy Muddy Water, written after the 2017 flood. And listen, if this is all triggering for you, phone Lifeline on 131 114 or get in touch with QLife, Australia's first nationally oriented counselling and referral service for LGBTIQ people. That's on 1800 184 527. You're on Bay FM 99.9, the most easterly station in the nation, lovers.
Even the Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull came to see the damage done. He got down on his hands and knees like he was trying to help someone. Hey, yeah. Everywhere we're working, trying to keep their faces brave, to salvage for tomorrow, save whatever they could save from that muddy water. Then somebody shouted, suspend our foreign aid, made the man sound bankrupt, like a puppet being played. It'll make you sick, Kev, don't drink that muddy water. My friend, you can axe the tax and stop the boats and blow smoke around the room, but to clear the mud dumped on this country, you'll need more than a broom. Hey, yeah. Hey, yeah. Hey, yeah. Muddy, muddy water. And now there's rubbish piling higher on the side of every street. We're all in it one way or another, from our eyeballs to our feet. Muddy water. Maybe we'll build a bonfire to burn against the night, but if we lift that levee higher, we better build it tight. That's right. You gotta help a brother, you gotta help a sister too. If we can't look out for each other, we're not gonna make it through. So people lift it higher, take it to a higher shelf, and pray to God it's not too late to help your climate and yourself. Hey, yeah. Hey, yeah. Hey, yeah. Muddy, muddy water. Hey, you might say you've been delivered. You might say that you've been damned. But when the deluge beats the Lismore levee, all God's children stand in muddy, muddy water. I'm talking about the last days of March 2017.
We're sitting on the banks of the Lester Creek, which flows down from Terania Creek and all the mountains in the hinterland down into Lismore and meets up with the Wilson's Creek. And the amount of water that flowed down a year ago today is now legendary. Jonty St. Clair was here and has captured stories from civilian rescuers, 41 of them in all, for her new exhibition, Rescue. Jonty, tell us about these characters. Who are they? What did they do? And why did you select these particular collection of people?
I think the civilian rescuers were everybody, anyone. They were quite often tradies. Who happened to have boats and jet skis, but they were also people who liked to go kayaking on the weekends or surfing, might even had a boogie board in the cupboard and the like. They were everyone. They were young, they were old, they were men, they were women. They found themselves on the 28th of February coming down to see if they could help. It was a remarkable effort. I've heard it said that it was the largest civilian search and rescue operation in Australian history. It's really amazing when you think about it like that. I have been working for maybe 10 months now with a photographer, Raymond DeViet, to try to gather some of the knowledge and the stories that are held by this remarkable collection of people. There's hundreds of them. But they've been very hard to get out of the woodwork sometimes. It was really important in inviting people to be involved that it was entirely voluntary as well. There's a lot of trauma in the bodies of the people who have been part of this rescue operation.
And in fact, the exhibition has a trigger warning for people that it might trigger that trauma again by just looking at the faces, I guess, which hold the stories that you've then transcribed and edited down and presented to the public. What is the kind of overarching theme that runs through the stories? Is it one of heroism? Is it one of a human response that was hard to deny?
Yeah, it's, you know, what is it? I'm not trying to present these people as heroes. Certainly what they did was fairly heroic, though, it was. They, I think, don't want to be seen in the largest heroes either. They were members of a community feeling compelled to help other people. It was really pure and simple in that kind of regard. So I think what I've really tried to do in the stories, whilst remaining really honest about their experience, and I've tried not to hide too much of what they've gone through. Having said that, I have tried to make the stories safer, perhaps, by not including some details. Because I don't want to totally trigger everybody who comes down to see the show. But what I've tried to show is what the impact has been on those people who've been involved and what they might have done to help their own personal recovery as well. There's some really lovely stories about people who have dealt with the post-traumatic elements of having been involved in the rescue operation.
Can you give us a little insight into some of those?
I think community's been really helpful for a lot of people. There is a really remarkable story of Tama Jones. Hi, Tama. He's a plumber from Lennox Head. He and his mate Ben Sattler came out with their jet ski on that morning. And Tama was able to spend some time processing what he went through with the support of his exercise group called the Boaty Boys, which I think have become fairly renowned because many of them came in to help. So there's a lot of that, he's been able to process some of his trauma through that, but also by having made some contact with some of the people that he rescued. People have really wanted to meet their rescuers. A lot of people don't know who rescued them. Everyone was in the moment. Everyone was sort of in shock on the day. And quite often they would just drop people off and then the rescuers would head off to try and find more people. And people are really, in a way, kind of desperate to thank the people that took them out of those incredibly precarious situations.
So they were on roofs, they were rescued from roofs in the middle of the night often. There was no electricity. And I guess their lives were saved by these anonymous people who just sort of were passing in their boats with flashlights.
It would have been a very different story if we didn't have a community that felt they could and they should and they ought to and they would step forward. It would have been a totally different story.
Because as it stands, there were about 5 or 6 people who died in the floods. What do you think that number would have been? Because how many people were rescued by these civilian rescuers?
Well, I think about... Yeah, you're right about the number of recorded deaths. And that was really, I think, yeah, because we had hundreds of people out there. There is a project to try and gather as many of those names as possible so we can, and we can actually start to maybe think about quantifying, you know, like kind of get a bit of an average about how many people had rescued. You know, a lot of people rescued 15 people, but some people rescued 50, you know. So maybe if you said there was like maybe 400 people who were rescuing or boats that were rescuing, and if there was, you know, they all rescued on average 25 people, it gives you a sort of sense then, you know, what's that, 1,000 people?
Wow.
You know,
look, it into context like that, I mean, if 1,000 people would have died that night.
Thank you.
One of the things that came, that sort of rose pretty quickly was this whole Love More response. Mm. So there were red hearts all over the city. Yeah. There were, this response that we're here for you. The community is here to catch you.
Yeah, it was a sign as well to say we're going through the process of coming back. You know, we're here, we're working on our recovery. So that became a real morale booster. And Rebecca Ryan, who instigated the Love Heart, the Hearts for Lismore banner project, has actually contributed a massive heart, Love Heart banner, for the exhibition, which she's made especially for it. She's been putting all her energy into making something special, and it looks amazing.
And you've got a tinny in the exhibition too. Which tinny is that? Where did it come from?
So that was sourced by one of our rescuers, Aidan Ricketts. Belongs to a friend of his, Jan. And that's in the exhibition. And descending from the ceiling, I don't know how I'm going to give away the
impact,
descending from the ceiling is a banner where we've got all the known names that have been collated by two women, Sarah Moran and Danielle Pickford, have been gathering the names through lots of different sources. And they've been actually working through a process of submitting each rescuer's name for a bravery medal. So we know in our hearts that they all deserve it. So hopefully that would be a really nice acknowledgement. But so we've got the tinny, and then descending from the ceiling into the tinny is a banner with the names of everybody that we know of who was involved in the rescues. And people are invited to make a note. There's some little love heart-shaped sticky notes there. So there'll be some pens, and you can write down your thoughts or ask for the name of your rescuer, or looking, you know, try and a bit of a dating service. Maybe we can actually connect people up with their rescuers and vice versa. Leave their thoughts about, you know, anything really, and then leave that note on the tinny. And over the course of the exhibition, I'll come in with a little box of pins and I'll pin all of those around the edge of Rebecca Ryan's heart banner.
What sort of response do you hope the exhibition will elicit from the community? Do you hope it does have that kind of healing mission?
Yeah, I've tried to make the exhibition reasonably safe for everyone. If there's anything really, I feel like, hairy, I've put it into a booklet that's hanging on the wall rather than actually flat on the wall. So people need to actually actively choose to go that next step further, if you like, and read that rest of that person's story. That's only in two of the stories that it's like that. All the rest of them are written in such a way that you should be able to opt out at any point. You go, oh, I'm not sure if I want to read anymore. You can even just come in and look at the face of the person and learn their name and a little bit about where they're from, maybe how they started that day. So I'm trying to make it a safe space for everybody to come to, because triggering, you know, I think there can be a tendency to think that being triggered is 100% bad thing. Actually, being slightly triggered is a way for your body to, I think it's what's called pendulate from to a traumatic memory into a safer container and go in and out. So we'll also have a number of grounding activities, information about how to ground yourself if you're feeling some anxiety, resurfacing, some things that you can do. And really wonderful that the Serpentine Gallery staff, all the volunteers there, have recently had some training with the Red Cross. It's called Accidental Counselor Training. I've done it myself. It's very helpful. So we will have we'll have people who have some experience and training in supporting people who are feeling a bit triggered. We'll have quiet spaces for people as well.
You've become the story catcher of Lismore, the flood story catcher. Your previous work in 2021 was flood stories, where people came into a container, put on a yellow raincoat, and got a little headset and went around with a map, listening to different people's stories from the 2017 flood. Did you ever expect that this was just around the corner, the 2022 monster flood?
No, but within a couple of days of the flood, I started to have people say to me, oh, Shanti, time for another flood stories? And I was like, okay, so this is how my community now sees me, is the person who catches the stories from the floods and helps us make sense of what's happened. But I was overwhelmed with thinking, but this flood was so much bigger. How do you make sense of that? So everyone's going, we don't know how to make sense of this flood. I don't know how to do that either.
You're not going to put on a yellow raincoat and walk around town again.
No.
No.
But one thing I did recognise was that we had a really unique occurrence with the size of the civilian response in search and rescue, and that this was important. These stories were remarkable, important, and we needed to catch some of them, as many as we could, and have that as a body of knowledge and also use it as part of our recovery process. So I approached Raymond DeViet, who's well known as a portrait photographer. In fact, he has a book of portraits of Northern Rivers creatives coming out in April. And I said, hey, would you be up for this? And he went, yeah. Yep, okay.
Fantastic.
So I think we started around late April, inviting people to come and have their portrait taken, share their story, and then sit down and have their portrait taken after that. And we continued working in that way pretty much till the end of last year. And then I actually had to sit down and finish writing them all. Because I actually had a period of time where I couldn't listen to the stories. I was experiencing a lot of secondary trauma through hearing these stories, which was just part of my own processing. But I managed to push through that. And then I found I was developing a beautiful relationship between these stories and my own sense of self as a member of the Lismore community, processing what we'd gone through. So I started to sort of see this map lying out in front of me as well, where it was like, oh, this is like a great big jigsaw puzzle. It's starting to make sense when you look. Everyone had their own individual experience of what happened in the flood. No one really knew what everyone else was doing. They knew there were other rescuers out there. But to actually sit down or stand there and look at their portrait and then read their story and then to find others, and you start to then get this bigger picture and you start to see commonalities in both how the experience is being processed, but also in the kind of things about doing a rescue in a massive flood like that, and like things about the built environment that made it difficult, whether that was how people's houses were built, like getting people through past the bullnose veranda awnings to the streets, you know, the things that they kept running into, street posts and, you know, netball hoops and, you know, football things and getting stuck on top of a giveaway sign and putting a hole in the boat, you know. I started to realise this is actually a very important body of, like, knowledge as far as, like, policy development would be.
So it could actually form the basis for a roadmap for the future, for how Lismore is reconstructed.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of ideas from the rescuers that we've spoken to about how things could be made easier. In fact, we'll be running a panel in the final week of the exhibition, date not quite confirmed yet, with rescuers, so that people from Lismore or the broader community can come and ask questions of the rescuers, ask them how they're going, ask them what some of their experiences were, talk to them about how can we be better prepared in terms of what the built environment can look like, you know, what kind of policy should we develop, how can we work with the SES and with the police. And can start going down that process of coming back better.
Let's learn from this experience, difficult though it may be on this first anniversary.
Yeah, absolutely acknowledging that. It's a tough day. The first anniversary period is one of mixed emotions, I think. Mm. Yeah.
Well, thank you for talking with us, and all power to you, and good luck to all of the Lismore residents moving forward.
Thanks very much, Nell.